Welcome to Vincent Price's Laugh.
Welcome to the inaugural episode of Vincent Price's Laugh. I'm your host, Andrew, with my lovely co-host.
Hi, I'm LB.
Oh, you're not going to try to do one of those Transylvanian lady voices?
I'm not Elvira.
She doesn't do... Never mind. So, everybody, welcome to the show. What's it about? Well, what is it about, Elby?
Well, we are going to watch scary movies of all sorts.
Not just, old Hammer horror movies or whatever Vincent Price was in, but we like Vincent Price a lot, so...
I'm strangely attracted to him. I don't know what it is.
I mean, he's got this class and suave, and, the first movie that we're going to talk about is called Monster Club.
I will take you to a place where my friends foregather. There you will find stories of such blood-curdling terror that will make your toes curl and your hair reach up towards the sky.
He likes to take you by surprise. He likes to leave a very special calling card.
It was the best blood I have ever tasted.
He's giving you a very special invitation. Three stories to shock you, chill you, thrill you, and make you laugh.
Everybody knows about garlic and stakes through the heart.
Yes, we all have our cross to bear.
But remember, he likes to take you by surprise. You've been invited to the Monster Club. Come at your peril.
Welcome to the Monster Club.
It's about an author who writes horror novels.
Yeah.
And he's the real author of the novel this movie is based on.
Well, he's played by John Carradine.
That really wasn't him? I know, I know, I know it was John Carradine.
I've never seen John Carradine never look old. I've never seen him young. And I've never seen his hands not look gnarled.
Yeah, it looked like he didn't have fingers.
Like he had, his pinkies were constantly straight, but pointed to the side. It's kind of sad. I'm dreading my hands as I'm getting old, getting all wonky. But I digress. So
the author of these horror stories, horror novels, is just kind of hanging out
and walking down the street.
Well, he's in front of a bookstore that's selling his novels.
Right.
And it's got his giant portrait and he's admiring it. And then this guy comes out of nowhere and he's like kind of like a bum and he's like, "Oh, I'm so starving, I'm dying." And
that is our friend Vincent Price.
Yes.
I wish I could do an impression of Vincent Price, but I can't do it. You're not going to make me do it.
No.
You don't want to hear me do it.
I do want to hear you do it, but only if it's good.
It's not good.
Okay, then don't do it.
I can't even think of a phrase to say.
I don't know either. I was trying to think of maybe something that he said to Kermit the Frog, because he was on the Muppets.
Was he?
Yeah, he and Kermit both had fangs.
Yeah, he's got fangs in this movie, because he's a vampire.
He's a vampire.
A vampire. He doesn't turn John Carradine's character. He just bites him, and then he takes him to a monster club.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah, a lot of new wave stuff. Movie was shot...
New wave? I wouldn't say new wave.
No, it is.
It's I don't
beginning.
Know.
It's the beginning of new wave. It is 1980. Came out domestically in America in 1981, but 1980, there were new wave bands there, especially the guy was just his head. And no, it's not just his head. It's him singing, but the camera will not leave his face.
I thought that was odd because they weren't showing the rest of the band and, you know.
No people dancing.
But that guy was actually a solo artist. So it makes a little bit more sense.
I guess, but solo artist, Elton John's a solo artist and he has a band sometimes. Anyway, Elton John's not part of this movie.
No.
UB40 is somewhere. They did music for the incidental scenes, the dialogue scenes where the bookend parts, because we didn't tell you, and we're telling you now, this is an anthology.
Yes, that means there are little stories inside of a bigger story.
The wraparound story. And this was directed by, I don't remember the fella's name, Roy Ward Baker. He's the director, and this is his last movie, but he's famed for doing other anthologies for Amicus, which is just after Hammer dissolved, Amicus sprung up and took its place. And this is the sort of like the last hurrah, and he seems like he's pretty old in this because there's some rhythm that's missing, I think.
Mainly from the band.
No, the bands have rhythm.
Yeah, they're okay.
They're alright. So, bands aside, the stories. Let's do the first one. The first one is...
Let's start off by saying Vincent Price, our hero vampire, invites John Carradine, our hero author, to the Monster Club. And they're having drinks. Vincent Price is having blood. John Carradine is having tomato juice.
Tomato juice.
Oh.
Tomato, 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 tomato. Let's call the whole thing off.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So then he tells them stories.
He tells them stories, but the reason why he's telling them these particular stories is he points to this poster that's on the wall. There's a chart that shows different genealogy of monsters, and
they're all derived from vampire, though. Top one, if a vampire bites the neck of a werewolf, it's a something or other.
Well, right, yeah, there's the three main categories of monsters, which are vampire, werewolf, and ghoul.
Yeah.
And then from there, it goes into what would happen if a vampire mated with a ghoul. It would produce this thing.
It's not just biting the neck, yeah. It's mating, so yes. The offspring. It's like this weird biblical, anti-biblical, I suppose, genealogy, and it's bizarre.
Yeah, so it just keeps going on down the line. What if this monster mated with this monster, and then the product of their mating mates with the product of another set's mating, and
it gets kind of complicated. Names, and they're convoluted.
And they have different traits and powers. So the stories are about
a kind of ghoul, a monster creature.
Yeah.
So the first one was the thieves. They wanted to get in with a big score.
Mm-hmm.
So they look in the newspaper and find an ad for a guy who needs his estate cataloged. And this guy, he's some weird monster name. And he just looks kind of like an old Nick Stahl.
Like Nick Stahl mixed with Fred Armisen, but as a vampire.
But he's not a vampire.
Right.
He's just something that whistles, and when he whistles, he melts whatever he's whistling at. And it's a high-pitched squealing whistle.
But you can hear it and not be melted. It has to be directed to you.
Yeah. So he sees a cat eat a pigeon that he was feeding, and he was like, no, cat, no! Then he whistles at the cat, and the cat melts.
Yeah.
We only see the aftermath of that, but it's pretty gross.
Yeah.
A big goo splotch in the shape of a cat. So there's a couple that is trying to basically rob the guy.
Yeah, they're con artists.
Yeah. So she goes and gets a job doing the catalog for him, but she's immediately spooked because he's kind of weird looking.
Mm-hmm.
But her guy says, hey, no, you go back. But he's British, so. So she does go back.
This is a British movie, by the way.
So we got one American actor and two American actors in it, actually.
Anyway, so the monster of the mansion falls in love with the girl.
And she just goes ahead and robs him anyway.
Yeah, he asks her to marry him, and she's like, well, I guess I ought to marry him so that I can get to his safe, which has all of his treasures.
There's a lot of money and a lot of jewels and trinkets and stuff that's worth a lot of money. So he crosses her that way during this big party and then whistles at her, but not too hard.
Because she doesn't melt completely.
No, she shows up back at her beau's house, and he's like, what's going on then, mate? Because that's her mate. She turns around and she's like,
you'll still love me. You could still love me.
But of course, none of that sounds accurate.
Her face is all melted. Hair is burned.
The front of her is charred and melty.
What I thought was funny about that particular scene is that her voice sounded like she was talking from behind a mask.
It was because she was.
Yes.
Most likely.
It wasn't makeup, it was a mask.
Right. Yeah, it was a mask. I think, yes, it was. Oh, all the ghouls, when they cut back to the music scenes.
All the
partiers in the club, they are wearing masks.
Yeah, it looks like a Halloween party and not so much real monsters.
It really looks like the coolest Halloween party ever.
Yeah.
Because they're all wearing these old shock masks and topstone looking things, and it's amazing. They look like the sand fleas from the Aquabats, except wearing monster masks. You know what the sand fleas are. Striped, long sleeve shirts, sweaters. They look great.
Like burglar sweaters?
Yeah, green and purple. These guys look cool a lot of times. You just watch the movie. Why are you like, I didn't see that guy. He was on stage.
I saw no
stage the whole time. Well, the second story, that one took a long time to get good. That was that bullied kid.
Yeah.
His dad's a vampire.
He was like quintessential British boy.
Yeah.
In his little British boy school uniform.
And all the other little British boys are like,
oh, but you can't jump over that puddle, mate. What are you, a little bugger? Hey, gonna cry, baby?
And all that stuff.
That sounded Australian at the end.
Well, because I said, not baby.
Because you said,
no, baby?
Yeah.
Cry, baby?
Yeah.
You're gonna cry? You're gonna cry to your mum? That's what you're gonna do. Cry, buddy. Is your dad a vampire? What? So basically, kind of, that's the whole setup. This kid's bullied.
And then shows
Donald Pleasant as a vicar.
Yeah, but he's not really a vicar.
No, but he seems like a pedo at first, actually. He's like, I'll walk you home. Make sure you get home safe.
Here's some caramels.
The kid's like,
I shouldn't be talking to strangers, mate.
Why is everybody mate?
Because it's British. It just seems natural. natural to me to say mate at the end of sentences when I'm doing a Brit voice.
Oh.
Watson, come over here, mate. Take a look at this here. Oh, you wouldn't get it anyway, mate.
What are you talking about, Sherlock, mate?
Okay.
Anyway.
So Donald Pleasance is actually a vampire hunter.
Yes. And he's got these two dudes with him.
And they wear really sharp suits.
Yeah, bowler hats.
They look real cool.
And the two guys are pretty... Well, at least one of them. One guy's kind of like a taller dude, kind of a rough face. He's really interesting looking. The other guy is like this somewhat oval, sharp chin guy with a mustache, and he's the jolly one.
Yeah.
Jolly good show. So he kills the vampire, his dad. This is new to the kid. He's like, what? My dad's a vampire? Huh? Kills the vampire, and that guy's like, all right, good show. Except he's not saying anything. He's doing this with all body language. But you can hear him say, jolly good show, mate.
His eyebrows sprout mouths. And it comes out. No.
That episode was pretty fun. They had to kill Donald Pleasance. And that scene's really funny, too.
Because he got bitten.
When the guy taps very lightly on the stake.
Yeah.
When he's killing Donald Pleasance, he's like really remorseful. And like the...
Because he doesn't want to kill his mate.
But... But also that the tap is going to be like this terrible sound. You know how people wince at the noise? When he does this little tap and he winces, it's so good. That scene is great.
It's pretty funny. And then it turns out the kid's dad is not even dead because he's wearing a, get this, stake-proof vest.
Which is bizarre because the stake went all the way through his chest.
Yeah.
He's like, nah, it's just tomato ketchup.
It's just silly.
Yeah. So that one goes on and it's done. A little bit more with Vincent Price. And then the third story, which is actually the best story.
Yeah.
It's like a little Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, it's weird.
A horrible director. He's just gruff. Rawr! I know how that is, because I myself am a gruff, horrible director. Not a director, just gruff and horrible. He is doing a movie and he's like, I need this kind of town. It's a smoky, sleepy, foggy, atmospheric little village. So the guy gives him a map. He says, there's three right here. And then he finds one and he goes to it.
And it's only like a couple of miles from London. So it's not even that remote or anything.
Yeah, the highway is like a mile away. And so he drives off that highway and he shows up at this place and he just walks into this beat up house, a tavern. And he's like, kind of jokingly, like, anybody here? Because it doesn't look like anybody would be there. But then there's a guy that shows up.
Yep, weirdo.
Messy, dirty. And so he's like, can I talk to your boss? Is there anybody that I can talk to? He's like, the elders? So what?
Well, anytime you go to a town and someone has directed you to the elders, you need to get out.
Yeah, and check your car, because they're going to mess your car up so that you can't leave. Yeah. That's what happens to this guy. So he's standing there looking at the guy, and he's like, the elders, well, I got to get back to London. They're like, you can't go to London. It's too dark. You don't want to leave in the dark and all that stuff. And he's like, why? It's too dangerous. Which is really weird for him to say, because the guy just turns around and there's the entire village in that little room.
Like, literally within seconds.
And I am not being hyperbolic here. It's the entire population of the village. It's like 24 people in that little room, the foyer, to the tavern.
Right behind him.
And he didn't hear them come in. It's actually an effective scene. This whole segment is really effective. It's my favorite. Goes to his car won't start. He checks his car and lo and behold, they messed it up.
Yep.
He gets forced upstairs.
Yeah. Yeah, they start pushing him around and he can't fight through them.
Well, he can, but he's just a civilized man, so he's not even gonna swing a punch, but they just crowd around him.
Yeah.
Imagine,
like, they're going to lynch him or something.
Yeah, I imagine this, but like 9-year-olds around me, and it's terrifying because I can't do anything against a 9-year-old. Who's gonna hit a kid, right? So this is I'm imagining him.
You're 6'4", you could just step over them.
I could try, but then they'd trip me and I'd be down at their level.
I guess.
So it's a kind of a terrifying idea. A bunch of 9-year-olds. No, so imagine these people are equivalent to my terrified 9-year-old experience.
Right.
And they push them upstairs and then they lock them in a room.
Oh, they all look dead, by the way.
Yeah, really ghoulish. Except one. She brings them dinner.
Right. Well, the reason why this story is being told is because she is the daughter of a ghoul and a human. So I actually remember her hybrid name, which is Humgu. The story is basically centering around her.
Yeah, and she...
She doesn't speak in complete sentences, and she acts all weird, and she's wearing this, like, old-timey nightgown, and she starts telling him about how they get all the clothes and all the supplies and all the food from these boxes. And she points across the street where you see a church and a cemetery.
Graveyard. And they apparently dig up the graves, and they eat They call it the Great Eating, whenever they eat a corpse that they find in the grave. But now they've taken to people who come into town.
Well, they've run out. They've dug up all the corpses.
Yeah, so they've taken to strangers and keeping them in the town and then eating them.
So basically what happened to her mother was that her mother was human. She came into the town and somehow one of the ghouls of the town had his way with her. And then she gave birth and she died.
Yep.
And then they put her in a box and then they dug her up and then they ate her, which it doesn't really make sense why they would put her in a box and bury her.
Well, that's just the ancient ways, young woman.
I guess so.
That's just the ancient ways of the elders.
The elders.
Oh, this part's cool. Dude goes across the street to this mausoleum thing, and he finds it's like a church, and he finds this actual rather convenient expository about the ghouls.
Yeah, it's like whoever, a skeleton with a journal that yeah. he's been writing in.
But there are these drawings, and they're really good drawings for the most part. Somewhat comic book art, somewhat wood etching, like a combination of the two, of the story of the ghoul mm-hmm. that came into town. It was a nice vicar who took in this ghoul, tried to bring him back to good health. He just thought he was a crusty old dude. And he said, the Lord's work is caring for those who have no care, who haven't been cared for. So he does. But then he finds this ghoul late at night eating a person in the grave, out of a grave.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot if they run them off, but
that's a bit fuzzy for me too.
The next page that they showed were like a bunch of ghouls
running through the woods,
and they're like, once we got rid of that guy, there were much more that came following, and I guess those are the elders.
I guess.
Yeah, it's weird. So he and the lady, they run, they leave, except they're throwing rocks, and one hits her in the head, and she dies.
Aww.
Yeah, that's actually sad, but cliche, but sad. Yeah. At the time, I don't think it was too cliche. 1980, but he gets out, and then he flags down a cop, and the cop's like, cool, all right, and then he takes him back to the town.
Yeah. He's like, will you please take me back to the police station? And the cop's like,
get him.
And then he realizes that he's being taken back to the same road.
Because the cops are escorting the elders. We always give the elders an escort when they come back to village. So as far as satisfying story, that's the most satisfying story. It's all totally wrapped up with the ironic twist ending.
Yeah, but it's also a little bit too easy of an ending, I think.
You only think that now. Imagine.
Well, I don't think it's fully thought through.
I don't think anything in this movie is fully thought through, really. No.
Especially the choice of bands.
Yeah.
Sorry, I keep harping on that.
Hey, some of the songs are cool. Like, what you've been hearing underlying this whole show is part of the soundtrack. It's cool.
Monsters rule, okay?
Okay. So does Snoopy. Snoopy rules, okay?
Okay.
I say that because on the kids, the vampire dad, the kids' wall, he has a poster that says Snoopy rules, okay?
Which we found out is actually like a British gang thing, like from the 1970s with the graffiti tags. A gang would write, you know,
Teddy boys rule, okay?
Yeah. And then some other gang would come up and be like, dead pirates rule, okay?
Yeah, okay.
So that's where that comes from. But we were like,
what's
with the okay?
Yeah.
Now we know. We should make every episode have something that we learned.
Well, okay then. We'll try. We'll try to keep our learning ears open.
Yep.
And our learning eyes open. Try not to go blind or deaf.
You have to blink.
Yeah, it's true. Well, there is a thought out part.
Yeah, there's a speech that Vincent Price gives at the end of the movie when he wants to induct a John Carradine's character, the author, into the Monster Club, because they have never had a human in the Monster Club before, because obviously humans are not monsters.
And they're all like, no way, what the heck for? What's his criteria?
Yeah, the werewolf MC guy is like, what's his power? Humans don't do anything. And then...
In the past 60 years, Humes have exterminated over 150 million of their own kind. No effort has been spared to reach this astronomical figure. And the methods that they have used must demand our unstinted admiration. Not having a fang or a claw or even a whistle worth talking about, they invented guns and tanks and bombs and aeroplanes and extermination camps and poison gas and daggers and swords and bayonets and booby traps and atomic bombs and flying missiles, submarines, war small ships, aircraft carriers, and motor cars. They have even perfected a process whereby they can spread a lethal disease on any part of this planet, not to say anything about nuclear power. Oh, during their short history, you know, Humes have subjected other Humes to death by burning, hanging, decapitation, strangulation, electrocution, shooting, drowning, crushing, racking, disemboweling, and other methods far, far too revolting for the delicate stomachs of this August descent.
I never realized he was so talented.
So yeah, that's pretty much the whole point of this movie.
Humans are monsters.
The worst of them all.
I mean, duh.
Yeah. So, I think this is a historic relic. Now, I got this for you for Christmas one year because you were like,
I like this movie.
Because we watched an old VHS copy of it. You liked it at
the
time.
I did.
A lot. And now that you watched for the first time the Perfect Picture Blu-ray, what do you think?
It wasn't as fun. I honestly thought that it was a different movie. And I know that's terrible because...
I don't know how you thought that it was a different movie because we watched it and you were like, yeah...
Yeah, but I didn't remember watching it. And then later you mentioned Monster Club to me, and I was thinking of Vault of Horror, which is another Vincent Price anthology movie, but also starring my favorite actor of all time, Terry Thomas.
I don't think it's Vincent Price.
Is it not?
No, it's Vault of Horror is just...
Then what is it?
It's a Tales from the Crypt movie. Vincent Price isn't part of it. It is an Amicus movie.
I swear it had Vincent Price in it.
But Vincent Price isn't in it, no. It's just an anthology movie with Terry Thomas. And you thought Terry Thomas was in Monster Club?
I did. I guess I got them confused.
You certainly did.
Because I was totally, like, when this movie started this evening, I was looking for Terry Thomas in the opening credits, and I was like, well, maybe he's special guest, uncredited something or other. But no, yeah, he wasn't in it because
I'm
wrong.
He was the sand flea.
Maybe he was the werewolf club treasurer.
Maybe he was. That's a very, very hearty mustache he has there.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not him. Well, I would say as a relic, yes, this is well worth it. It's an oddity to be sure, but
yeah.
Being that it's the last movie by that old guy, I think he was just too old to make a movie anymore.
Maybe, but I mean, it's for a horror anthology, it's really very decent.
It's also light. It's not that horrific.
Yeah.
I think there's even a strip tease that goes somewhere.
Oh, right.
It goes somewhere where you don't expect it to go. Which is good. I would rate this movie PG, actually, because it's not that horrific. There's no gut munching. There's no gore. No hard gore.
The goriest it is like the little two dot on the neck vampire
and
bites.
And the goo cat shit.
Yeah.
So, I would say it's a PG sort of fare. It almost gets into rated R when you see the striptease, but I ain't gonna tell you what happens then, because you gotta look it up, because that's pretty cool. It doesn't go into nudity area, but it's pretty cool.
You know, my favorite part was at the very end when...
The movie was over?
No, right before the movie was over.
What's the part?
Where Vincent Price goes over to watch the band and he starts dancing and clapping. And then this very large woman comes up and tries to dance with him because that's always funny. And his face, and he just goes along with it, and his face is just, like, hilarious. Like,
he's doing a lot of smile expressions, but they're very different each.
What's the, I won't be able to do it, but you know that sound that, like...
Yeah.
He saw me put my finger up to my neck like I was pulling my collar, shirt collar out.
That expression, he does the, what did I get myself into?
Right.
He does the, oh, this is so cool.
But then he's also just genuinely happy looking.
Yeah.
So.
Good for Vincent Price. Being happy. On that note, a happy note, we bid you adieu. Farewell till next time.
Goodbye, everyone. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is brought to you by Ouch My Ego. Visit ouchmyego.com.
Here's some caramels.